Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, my friend, and happy Monday. I hope you had a lovely weekend. Welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is the news episode where we catch up on all the week's news. There is a lot to talk about. I will say I have possibly the biggest rant I've ever had on this podcast in the middle of this news section, where I feel like I kind of temporarily lost my mind. So apologies in advance. Maybe that's because I spent the weekend solo parenting, which is fine. I kind of went off kilter on Saturday because I for some reason decided I wanted to do a load of cleaning in addition to parenting, which just doesn't work with the age that my kids are. Very hard to get the cleaning done and the parenting done at the same time. And I was having my son was having some friends over in the afternoon. I think it was for them that I decided I was doing the cleaning. Then I decided I had to obviously make chocolate chip cookies from scratch, and I had to have, you know, loads and loads of snacks. I had to go to Tesco. So by the time the children arrived, I was kind of already had crossed over into insanity. And then I was obviously a servant for the duration of the time that they were here. That's how it goes. That's part of the job. Fine. But I started to feel very annoyed about it toward the end. Not about the other children, but I was like, why is my 7-year-old not expressing more gratitude at all of the work that I've done to make this lovely day for him? And I won't lie, I came very close to ruining his lovely day because I started to get so kind of snappy and cranky. So yeah, lots of lessons learned there. Number one lesson probably being, why do I feel like I need to perform perfection for a 7-year-old who's coming to visit my house? Like, why am I doing that? Like, what's that about? Probably something I need to bring up in therapy, to be honest. But yeah, it was a pretty full-on weekend. So by the time I got to this morning, I think I was just maybe already starting at a frantic pace. I hope your weekend was good. I hope you did fun stuff. No worries. If not, they can't all be good, as we always say. I would like to say a massive thank you to everyone who has joined the Patreon. You are just the best. I don't have the words to say how much I appreciate you and how much it helps me keep going with this podcast because you know, I guess just to make it financially viable, I need your support, essentially. So thank you so much. If you want to join, patreon.com/catchupwithlouisemcjerry, but the link is in the show notes as well. Let's keep it going. As I said, lots of news to get into with Carl Kinsella of thejournal.ie. Carl Kinsella, how are you? How was your weekend? How was Amsterdam? How's your life? I see you're going deep on growing a beard.
Yeah, I feel like that could change at any moment. I think I could wake up at any, because I know a lot of people, like, they'll grow a beard and they'll really like commit to it.
Yeah,
I don't think mine quite looks good enough to really commit to. I think it's still, you know, I think there are still kind of fundamental issues with the just patchiness. So I'd say it'll get 1 week. I'm gonna come on here and I'm not gonna have a beard.
Okay.
That's what I'll say. And it could be next week.
Okay, well,
it'll be soon.
Our friends who are listening, please have great faith in the fact that I will report as things develop. How was your weekend?
So my week, I think you saw on Instagram, I was supposed to go back to Dublin last week for my birthday.
Yes.
But instead, what I did was I booked my flights in reverse. I booked my flights. So like I booked my first flight from Dublin to Amsterdam and my second flight from Amsterdam to Dublin, which is the opposite direction in which I need to travel in order to get home.
Very hard to travel from Dublin to Amsterdam when you are, in fact, in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And, you know, you'd think that'd be the kind of thing that would occur to me before I booked the flight. But no, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I got it wrong. But in any case, I ended up not going home at all. So I just kind of, I just stayed here.
When did you notice that the flights were wrong?
When I went to check in online and I could see that I was, and because there's an hour time difference, I could see I was gaining an hour back on the second flight. And I was like, that doesn't look right. And it still took me a couple of minutes to like work out what was wrong. And then I was like, this flight isn't from Amsterdam at all. What can you do?
I'd say your parents were devastated, were they?
I think they were, they were a little bit upset, but, I think they were mostly just worried that I would be annoyed, but like, I didn't really mind. So I just kind of got on with it and I'll be home around March, late March sometime.
You're such a trooper, Carl. Do you know what I mean? Like, fair play to you, pushing through. Okay. Yeah. Let's get into the news. We will start in Gaza. I feel like we're just not getting anywhere ever. And it is just more and more soul-destroying by the day.
Yeah, no, if anything, I feel like the last week has been even more upsetting than... I mean, like, you know, it's very hard to quantify these things and put them on a gradient. But, like, there's really disturbing stuff this week. There was what's kind of been called colloquially in its aftermath, the Flower Massacre, which is... a horrible event that happened during the week, which is, you know, several humanitarian aid trucks were allowed into the Haroun al-Rashid Street in Gaza. And these trucks were, you know, the people desperately need aid. But what the people described was that they were basically fired upon by Israeli soldiers straight away, you know, as they approached the truck. And not only were they fired upon, but after people were left dead and injured, tanks advanced on them and rolled over them, tanks and bulldozers and other kind of like large vehicles. Mm-hmm. If you read a report in Al Jazeera, you'll read, you know, multiple witness reports of people saying that they felt trapped, they felt ambushed, that it didn't really seem like an earnest human. Like, what's the IDF side of things, they've kind of absolved themselves. They've said that there was just chaos, that there was rioting, that people were just trying to get at the food, and that's what led to all the destruction. But it seems to be kind of independently cited by multiple different sources that in actual fact there was just widespread firing upon civilians. Yeah. And some of the images from it, again, it's sort of similar to the bombing of Rafah during the Super Bowl. Again, some of the images are just so horrifying. That it really just, like, I don't recommend really looking them up. They're awful.
No, there's one in particular I think that people have found really difficult to process, that I came across by mistake. I didn't seek it out, and it just feels like a new bar is being set, like, every week for absolutely horrific things you feel like you'll never forget and that you can't live with, and yet somehow we are continuing to live. And that, I think, as human beings is very difficult to process, from our side. But from their side, like, from the people who are actually there, like, people are starving to death. We know this now. We have seen various professionals from aid agencies, multiple different aid agencies, saying that it's just impossible to get food in, and saying that the only thing that's stopping them is Israel. Israel are not letting food and other rations into the country. There was a video last week of food packages being dropped by Jordan to Palestinians. And the videos were gorgeous. It was of people just so happy to be getting a bit of help. And didn't seem to be any rioting or any kind of nastiness. I mean, yes, people were holding on tightly to their food packages, but there was laughter and, you know, relief. Yeah. And, you know, so the idea that you would allow a truck in and then shoot and kill the people as they go to get the desperately needed food and other, you know, other resources is just disgusting. Like, And then you've got Joe Biden saying, oh, we'll ensure that aid gets in. And it's like, buddy, what are you doing? Like, you, yeah. So you're going to send aid, or you're going to assist in aid getting to a country so that the Israelis can use weapons that have been paid for by you or provided by you to kill them? Like, it's just, I feel like I'm living in some sort of weird dystopia.
And the aftermath of the Flower Massacre was especially bad in that whole thing of like traditional media outlets using the sort of exonerative voice where they, you know, refuse to acknowledge who fired the shots and who actually had the agency in that event. Like they, it's all just, you know, Palestinians killed, you know, and it's so frustrating because you're watching this unspeakably horrible, vivid, nightmarish violence unfold. And then you're reading about it and you're not even getting a clear picture. You're just kind of being told that, you know, there's chaos. Like it's as if the media is trying to obfuscate what actually happened, when of course that's the opposite of their job, which yeah. is, and it was something like 112 people were killed overnight in this one event. And there was a similar incident I think it was the day before yesterday. So you're talking about, you know, what some people are online are saying, this is kind of like almost like a trial balloon, mm-hmm. where it's, you know, it's constantly the IDF pushing and seeing what can we get away with, how much further can we take these atrocities, how much easier can we make our jobs in terms of just ethnically cleansing Gaza. And
and it seems like they can get away with whatever they want at this point. Yeah. I mean, that's the horror of it.
Yeah. I was just going to say, this week it's kind of interesting, Kamala Harris called for an immediate 6-week ceasefire, which I thought was interesting because right now Joe Biden is so unpopular in the US, and with young people he's very unpopular due to how he's handled Gaza. So it's really interesting to see his vice president kind of offer quite a different perspective on it. Again, obviously it kind of goes without saying, it's ridiculously late in the game,
too little too late,
to start behaving as though you care about Gaza, you know, like these bombs and airstrikes and all this has been happening for 5 months. It's absurd to claim now that you know see the logic in a ceasefire when you didn't see it before. But I think politically it does separate her somewhat from Biden, and I think, you know, I do think she's making this statement because of political considerations and not ethical ones, but I just found it interesting, you know?
I just genuinely don't know how anyone at this point could possibly believe that there's anything other than a ceasefire that's appropriate. Like, it is, like, no matter how kind of extreme you are, no matter what side of the fence you're on, like, I just don't know how you could possibly continue to justify these actions. Genuinely, as a human being, I cannot get my head around it. And I think that is how most people feel. Unfortunately, there is no kind of neat way to tie that up. It goes on. You know, all we can hope is that there's some dramatic turn of events over the course of the next week, that we won't be having the exact same conversation this time next week. Okay, so there was big weather this week. Snow came out of nowhere, as Met Aaron said. If they'd had a crystal ball, maybe they would have been able to predict it. But
that was one of my favorite things that has happened. And so I missed my birthday by not flying home, but I also missed the snow.
Oh.
So it was, you know, that was actually the tougher thing, because I love snow. I love just messing around.
Did you not get any snow in Amsterdam this winter?
No, there was no snow at all here.
Oh.
It's actually quite nice here at the moment. It's very mild, very springtimey.
It's actually kind of like that today in Dublin as well. Like, the snow feels like it was just like this one day anomaly, which is presumably why Met Aaron couldn't predict it.
Honestly, yeah. And it is quite funny because, I wrote about this at the weekend, so I did do some research into it. And, like, it is quite hard to predict snow in Ireland, you know. So, like, you do sympathize a bit, but it's just the phrasing of, like, maybe if we had a crystal ball, it's just so funny. It's like, well, surely you have other stuff, right? It's like, you know, you have stuff that meteorologists use.
I think that's the whole deal, isn't it? That you have access to stuff that we don't, or even if it's just knowledge. Obviously, kind of entertaining for some people in Ireland, but unfortunately trickier for people who are homeless. Trickier feels like actually completely the wrong word to use. Like, I would say dangerous for people who are homeless. And there has been a situation around the Office of International Protection in town for quite some time now around Main Street, where there have been more and more and more tents outside and people living in tents around the office, and this became an even bigger issue when the snow fell.
Well, that's something we're always looking at the journal, is we're always checking up on the figures of international protection applicants who haven't been given accommodation. And currently those figures in Ireland, they're really high. It's like 1,100 men in Ireland seeking international protection haven't been accommodated. So that's 1,000 people or more sleeping rough. Mm. And certainly when you have situations like snow or like, you know, sub-zero degree temperatures at nighttime, those people are in serious danger. Because I mean, I think people make a delineation in their minds between men and women and children, but like, there's, you know, there's really no reason men can't be vulnerable as well. Like, you know, those men, they could be sick, they could be injured, you know, they're coming over from, you know, a place where they're fleeing and seeking international protection. So who knows what kind of vulnerabilities they could have, you know, whether it's or physically or anything.
I actually drove by there the day before on Friday. So what's that, the day after? No, the day of. Yeah, the day of the snow. Sorry, I literally couldn't even tell you my name today. On the day of the snow in the evening. So when the snow had stopped, I drove by there because I was on my way to collect my son. And it is quite shocking, the number of tents and the number of men, and it is men. Like, I mean, proper large crowds of generally young men outside all day long in that freezing cold weather. It's not okay.
It's ridiculous, and it is such a failure of planning at a state level. You know, I kind of hate the phrase joined up thinking, but it is a lack of joined up thinking. You know, we have one policy from one department and another policy from another department, and it just results in gaps whereby you have people not being supported, which is, you know, it's unacceptable, whether those people are Irish or whether they're international protection seekers. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, everybody is entitled to have a roof over their head, particularly when the weather conditions are so bad. It is really sad. You know, you have the CEO of Safety Net Primary Care saying that, like, you know, being out in the cold and wet, it exacerbates conditions like asthma, heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure. So really, like, just if you're out in the cold and wet, no matter who you are, you're going to be kind of more at risk of falling ill or being unwell, which is kind of crazy, because then you're in a situation where you have international protection seekers in Ireland ending up in hospital or this or that. And it's like, all these things could be avoided if we just had a system in place where we were able to process these people as quickly as possible, you know, get them somewhere to live, get them somewhere to work. Those, and I mean, obviously I'm saying that really flippantly, as if that's easy to do. That is difficult, there's no question. But it's something that the Irish government, I think, hasn't taken seriously. And it's something that we do need to take seriously. And it becomes more stark when you have a situation where, you know, people are getting soaked through. We had Emer McCauley from the Journal. She was down there speaking to people. She saw one man had Google Translate on his phone. He couldn't speak English, but he was, you know, typing out messages, like looking for help through Google Translate. I just thought that was so kind of, I mean, it's moving, but it is also just so sad. And it seems like, you know, these people are right outside the Office of International Protection or the International Protection Office. Like, it feels like more could be done.
And like, you know, the thing always to remember, I think, in this context as well, is that these are people who you don't know what they're coming from. Like, you know, they could be already, you would assume that anyone who's had to make the journey to another country on the basis of international protection is not at 100%. So, you know, you're talking about vulnerable people, and 100%. It's got to be only a matter of time before someone dies. I mean, it really does feel that way. Like, there was just recently a death of a homeless woman on the street who I know was much beloved in Dublin, Anne, who spent most of her time recently on Ainger Street. And you probably saw loads of posts about that online, which I thought was really gorgeous to see so much love for her and care for her and so many people who had relationships with her. It's gonna happen, and we will have to live with that. Like, I mean, there was that horrific video that went viral last week of a bin truck basically driving over tents there in that area. Yeah. Like, there could have been someone in there.
Precisely. And I we've had kind of issues like that in the past. I remember before the 2020 election, down by the canal, a bin lorry picked up a tent without somebody was in. You know, and I think that's it. When you have people living in tented accommodation, you have people kind of in the general public who, they don't have respect for that, you know, because it's a tent and because it's sort of makeshift and it's temporary.
I think people assume it's a choice as well.
that's, I think there's, yeah, there's so many different attitudes that I think play into the dangers that, that those people face. And I think, you know, that is all exacerbated when the snow comes down or when freezing cold.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's the responsibility of the government and Dublin City Council in this case. Although, of course, there are, like, you know, there are people in tents across Ireland, but in this specific case, yeah, Dublin City Council have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. And obviously that's not to say that there's no concern for people who live in tents in different areas of the city and indeed around the country. Like, I would be concerned about anyone who's living in a tent in the winter, like all winter long and indeed all year round, because there's loads of danger there when you're in that kind of situation.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, let's move on. There was a absolutely horrific story during the week about Tuzla and some of the agencies that it was using to care for vulnerable children.
Yeah, this is kind of an unusual story. This this came out during the week that Tuzla, it was going to stop engaging with two for-profit agencies after it paid out $14 million to provide unregulated emergency accommodation to vulnerable children.
And just to remind people, just in case you're not familiar, Tuzla is the Child and Family Agency. It's a governmental agency which is responsible for the well-being and outcomes for children and families in Ireland. So if you are a child in care, that they would be responsible for you, no matter what your circumstances are.
Yeah, so this week, Tuzla appeared before the Public Accounts Committee, the Joint Oireachtas Committee, and yeah, pretty serious questions were asked. It was found that they had paid 14 million euro to two companies who had done inadequate background checks. So one of these companies was called Ideal Care. It was used for emergency accommodation for young people in Ireland. And yeah, it was found that there was an inspection done of Ideal Care, and it found that their checks of prospective employees had been fabricated, which is to say that the background checks they were doing were either false or altered or fake in some way, which is, I mean, extremely disturbing. Like, if you were to find out that, you know, your child or a child that was important to you in some way had been housed somewhere where the people taking care of them, quote unquote, taking care of them, weren't properly background checked.
And I mean, I find it disturbing just as a human being without any child who's connected to this service. Like, the idea that you would take vulnerable children, like, I've said it so many times on this podcast, and I'm going to say it again, and I'm sorry, because I know I'm like a broken record, but like, as someone who had to be separated from my parents, well, my dad died, but from my mom as a result of her addiction. Now, I was very lucky that my parents, my aunt and uncle, were in a position to take me on. But I know how easy it is to find yourself in a situation as a kid where you are taken from one traumatic situation and put into a new one. And if you're lucky, that new one is better, but like, you're coming into it already broken. Like, that's the reality. Any child who has to be separated from their parents for whatever reason is not, maybe broken's the wrong word, because I don't want to suggest that there's something wrong with these children, but like, you are heartbroken anyway. And I can say that from personal experience. Like, nothing will compare to the pain that I experienced as a result of being separated from my mother. I don't want to start getting emotional, but like, you are so vulnerable. And we see time and time again that these children, you know, often carry that with them through their entire lives, and they never stand a chance because they're not cared for properly. You know, these are children who have already been failed on some level, whether it's by the system or whether it's by their family or some adult in their life. And the idea that we would not be taking the utmost care, that we would not be bending over backwards to make sure that these children have everything that they need and that their every need is met, from psychological needs to physical needs to everything, is revolting to me. And then 15 years later, should one of these children end up being someone who's exhibiting antisocial behavior, we will talk about them as if they're pieces of dirt, and we'll spit on them as we walk by them on the street. Maybe not physically, but like in our minds, like we will look down on them, and it will be our fault as a society. And I just, it is so galling to me that this kind of casual moves would be made by the agency, by this country, by this society in terms of caring for these children. It makes me sick.
I don't think I can even add anything to that. Like, that is, I mean, I can add that I'm sort of feeling in the mood to vote for like a Taoiseach Louise McSharry right now.
This just breaks me. Like, I can't, there's nothing else that gets me as much as this. Like, I mean, if we are not taking care of children, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? Like, we can all pat ourselves on the back and we can say, oh, we've put money in the rainy day fund and the economy is booming and, you know, we're performing well at this and we're performing well at that. If we are not taking care of children, we are failing. Like, that's it.
And it raises such questions over like what kind of due diligence TUSLA is actually doing in these cases, because, you know, as it could be kind of difficult to find out maybe that like a company is forging background checks for its staff. But like, as we can see here, like the owner of this company is an evangelical pastor, which is like already that's the kind of thing where like your eyebrows are raising and you're like, I would like to know more about this.
Well, you just kind of think, is it appropriate for someone with like a, you know, a religious kind of direction, no matter what religion it is it appropriate for them, you know? And maybe there's no issue, but maybe there is. Evangelical Christianity is all about trying to bring people into your religion, you know?
They kind of make their own rules. So you for me, and this is like no disrespect to like evangelism, but like they do sort of make their own rules.
The end result is that these companies are no longer being used because they were not doing their due diligence and they weren't doing their job properly. And, you know, just as normal people, you can read it and go, well, would you not have double checked that? Like, I mean, would you not have been really careful about that? It just feels so disgusting. Sorry, I'm really on one. Like, I can't be reasonable about this stuff.
Oh, I think you sound more than reasonable. I think that, you know, the lack of reason is the situation that's leading to us having children in emergency care that's not suitable whatsoever.
I feel like a compulsion when I read this. I just feel like, what am I doing with my life? Like, why am I doing all this stupid stuff when I should be spending every single, like, I want to like go and kidnap children from care and somehow bring them to a safe place. Like, it, and I just don't understand how everyone doesn't feel that way. And I know, like, look, I know that TUSLA is under immense pressure. I know that. Like, we've all read the stories. We have read, we've spoken about it on here. I've written about it in my opinion column. Like, you know, we know that there aren't enough staff. We know that there aren't enough resources. We know they are overstretched and there are unfortunately too many children in care. Like, that's a reality. But like, it is still unacceptable for this to be the result of that, number one. And number two, if there are too many children in care, maybe we should look at what the other societal issues are that are leading to children in being in care. You know what I mean? Like, if we continue to say, for example, criminalize addiction and we don't provide addiction treatment services in an appropriate way, if there aren't enough places, if we don't make it so easy for people who are addicted to get treatment if they want, it should be so easy, because it would save us money and it would save children. And, you know, as a country, we would only benefit from making it as easy as someone asking to get treatment for addiction. But instead, we make people jump through hoops. We make it too expensive. We make it inaccessible. We make it almost impossible to access. And then we send addicts to prison and then their children go into care. And then we have this cycle of, you know, again, it's just like just a little bit of joined up thinking, guys. Like, we would all benefit from this and these children would benefit from it. Maybe I should run for Taoiseach. I know you can't run for Taoiseach, but like, oh God, I don't know.
I mean, at least, you know, the presidential election is coming up soon. I think you'd have a decent chance in the presidential election, to be honest. Like, I can't see why not?
The thing about it is that, like, sorry, I will stop talking in a second. The thing about it is that I don't doubt that there are loads of politicians who feel the exact same way that I do. Like, I know that there are. I don't suggest that people think this is acceptable, but I think that it's just one of those things where there's so many problems to solve that you kind of end up, it doesn't end up being important enough. But I just kind of think, what could be more important than this? Like, it should be the number one priority, because again, it feeds into every other area of society. And the idea that someone could be making massive profit from taking children at their most vulnerable times into their, you know, care agency or whatever, and not even be checking that the people who are there are safe.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, I think I've made my point. I need to stop talking. I'm sorry, Carl. Sorry, everybody. Okay.
I feel like the listeners will feel very galvanized. I'm hoping they feel energized too.
Come on. I'm sorry. Yeah. I you know where you get me. I don't know. I'll stop talking.
Of course.
Okay, let's move on. Now, some people probably be annoyed to hear this, but I actually find this kind of amusing. I don't agree with it in principle, but I did find it kind of amusing. A statue of Queen Victoria was vandalized in Scotland, and one of the perpetrators was an Irish woman.
Yeah, which is, how cool is that? I mean, you know, I know we're obviously supposed to not really like, yeah, not supposed to endorse this kind of thing in principle. Me personally, I don't know, throwing porridge and jam over Queen Victoria is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have an ideological standpoint, like even if you're just doing that just to be funny, I think it's kind of funny. It's sort of like the Luke Kelly head thing. Like, I felt so bad. Like, you know, a guy was arrested and charged and sent to jail for that. But I always kind of thought the vandalizing of the Luke Kelly head was sort of like, had a bit of a traditional bent to it or something. You know,
do you remember the background of that, though? That story was actually awful. He was being paid and manipulated to do that. Yeah, but anyway, but I know what you mean. As a concept,
yes, it's sort of like amusing, but it may be in a way that maybe we shouldn't indulge as a society.
Yeah.
But in any case, these people had a point. They were doing it for a reason. It was a group called This Is Rigged. And what their whole aim is, they're trying to essentially reform Scottish governance. And yeah, it's this girl, Saoirse Ní Martin, she's the Irish girl. She is 30. And she was part of a duo that threw, as we were saying, porridge and jam over a bust of Queen Victoria in Glasgow's Kelvin Grove Art Gallery Museum. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they were arrested, which is, you know, and charged, which is, it's a tough one because you can't really just get away. We see this with Just Stop Oil as well. You can't quite get away with sort of throwing soup over precious artwork and heirlooms and not be arrested. But at the same time, whenever I do read these articles, I always do feel like it's a bit harsh or something. You know, like I would kind of wince at it a little bit that these people get charged with a crime. Because, I mean, being charged with a crime and then found guilty, it's no joke. It really, you know, messes with your life. So I think
these people go in with their eyes open. Like, I think they know what the consequences are. But like, yeah, I mean, look, when I saw the video initially, I was like, that's actually, I genuinely, my first response was, that's gross. Like, I don't like the idea of damaging art for any reason. You know, it doesn't sit well with me. But then,
I think in most of these cases, the art is like protected in some way, or like it's very rarely permanently damaged.
Yeah.
And that's how I reconcile it to myself. Because I do think as well that to like wreck, you know, priceless art is bad.
Yeah.
But I think typically it's like either behind a glass case. In this case, it's a marble bust, so they'll just like wipe it down, I guess.
Yeah. This is the thing. As I read on and I read the point that they're trying to make, and I realized that like no permanent damage had been done to it, I was kind of able to sit more easily with it, because their whole thing is that they refuse to be dragged back into the Victorian era. So they say diseases of starvation, including scurvy and rickets, are on the rise. Freedom begins with breakfast, hence the porridge and jam. And if you can't understand that, we'll shove it in your face. Food is a human right. We call out the rotten systems under which we were suffering. And I see it. Like, that's joined up thinking. That makes sense. Like, I get the point they're making.
Yeah, and food security, both in Ireland and the UK, is such a huge issue at the minute.
Yeah.
It kind of, I mean, it is an issue in Ireland. It is particularly an issue in the UK. Of course, there's been, like, use of food banks has exploded since 2011, you know, and that's, you're looking at a decade and a half of just severe poverty in the UK.
Yeah.
So, I mean, something like this, I think to a lot of people in the UK, this would probably look quite reasonable. Because, I mean, you are just seeing a lot of protest stuff in the UK at the minute. We don't need to get into it. But, of course, George Galloway was elected as an MP in a by-election this week. I think we shouldn't talk about that right now because it'll just take too long to talk about George Galloway. But, like, that, again, is an example of just kind of, I think, the desperation that's being felt by certain people in certain sections of the UK. Mm. And, yeah, I mean, if you're going to engage in some kind of protest or another, I would always recommend, you know, throwing jam over someone before electing George Galloway. Even, you know, though he's a very pro-Palestine voice at the moment, but there's other problems with George Galloway. Let's not talk about George. No. I said I wouldn't talk about George Galloway, and now I'm starting to talk about George Galloway.
Yeah.
So let's stop talking about George Galloway.
I will say a member of my family once got into trouble for throwing, I want to say, spaghetti at, I was going to say Chinese emperor, but that can't be. There aren't Chinese emperors anymore. But someone in a similar role came to Dublin, and someone I know was a teenager at the time and was involved in throwing, I think, spaghetti or noodles at them.
And was it like premeditated, or was it like an opportunistic thing of like, oh, there's the premier of a country, I guess I'll throw whatever.
No, I think it was a human rights thing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, no, it was like for a good reason, but I remember just being like, wow, what a thing to find yourself involved in.
See, I would assume that if I were to throw anything at anyone of any importance, that like a sniper would take me out in like seconds. You know, that's what I figure. I feel like you're always, particularly when these kind of big shot people are in town, I just feel like, because remember when Queen Elizabeth visited in like 2010, 2011, and there was all that talk of like, oh, people were going to be on lists and there would be snipers on top of the buildings and stuff. And like, we'd all be watched so closely. I think that made quite an impact on me.
Well, I just would never, like, I'm a chronic rule follower, so I could never do any of this. Like, I've been watching the protesters like walking into, say, public engagements of people where people are speaking and just disrupting them just by shouting about, you know, what's happening in Gaza and stuff. And I've been thinking, wow, I just would be so not brave enough to do that. So, unfortunately, I am a chronic rule follower, so you will never see me taking that kind of action. I will go for a nicely organized protest, though. That I'm not too afraid to do.
You never know. We might have you throwing spaghetti eventually.
Maybe we'll see. I don't recommend... Just to be clear, I do not recommend or condone that behavior, clearly, because I'm such a rule follower. Okay, I wanted to briefly touch on the fact that drone delivery has begun in Blanchardstown, which is something I think a lot of people have been wondering if it would come to Ireland, because they've been doing it in America for a while. But people have, obviously, because we're Irish, we have begun complaining about it.
Yeah, I don't know quite, I haven't decided how I feel about this. I will say, about a week or two ago, I was walking to the supermarket here in Amsterdam, and a robot whirred past me on the, like, on the sidewalk, on the footpath, like, just this little machine R2-D2 thing, like, flew past me, and I was standing, I was by myself, so I was just standing there, like, looking at it, and I was like, what? I was like, first of all, I was like, did that just happen? And second of all, I was like, what was that? Where is it going? What's it doing? And then when I saw the news about the drone deliveries starting in Ireland, I realized that like it's a similar little, it's a little, it was a wheeled drone doing some kind of delivery. But like, it was so freaky.
He was just on his way to do a job, Carl.
That's what freaks me out. It's like they're doing jobs. They're doing, and I don't want to be like an anti-robot person, but like, my God, it is a bit scary.
Yeah,
and
I find it a bit scary too.
Yes, so it's the company Mana. They're the ones leading the drone charge in Ireland. So yeah, it's Dublin 15, Blanchardstown. It's really funny that we often launch these things in Blanchardstown. Like, we also launch Krispy Kreme in Blanchardstown. There must be something demographic about Blanchardstown that makes it a good place to like try these things, which
I'd
love to.
Maybe densely populated?
I'd say it probably is quite densely populated, but I would have said less so, for example, than Tala, and less so than other areas. Basically, I'm just advocating for Tala to get some stuff.
Right.
That's what I want. If you could bring some of the stuff to Tala, that'd be cool.
Got it.
But yeah, the drones are very interesting. Like, they, they are causing problems. You know, people are annoyed, like, which makes perfect sense. Like, drones are loud. I don't know if you've ever been around, but like, I think the justification that's being given by Mana is that like, thousands of drones are being flown around Ireland all the time. People are drone hobbyists. Drones are quite commonplace. You know, it's kind of hard to go to a big park now.
My son has a drone.
Yeah, like they are kind of everywhere. And does he play with the drone? Does he like actually
A bit. Like, I mean, to be honest, within 48 hours of receiving the drone for Christmas, he flew it over our neighbor's wall, and they were in Australia for the month of January. So
that's amazing.
So we didn't get back for a while. I'm actually not sure if it's in operation. So yeah, no real report here on the drone.
Absolutely. Absolutely classic Christmas toy story where she's like, oh, it just got destroyed somehow, you know.
Yeah.
But they've done 170,000 delivery flights, Bobby Healy said. Bobby Healy is the Dragon's Den guy in charge of it. Bobby Healy was on Dragon's Den, I'm pretty sure, right?
I think so.
The IAA have said that it's like it falls into quite a complex, specific regulatory category, which requires explicit authorization from the IAA, the Irish Aviation Authority. Mm. It's interesting to see where it'll go, because, you know, it's the kind of thing that it only really works at this scale, because you couldn't really have, you know, 50 drone delivery.
Pause. Bobby Healy was not on Dragon's Den. Bobby Kerr was on Dragon's Den.
No. Oh my God. I'm just going to correct the record.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Bobby Healy, he won't sue me for that, I don't think.
No, I think it's okay.
I'm sorry, Bobby Healy.
It's okay. All's forgiven, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So there's hassle. People are complaining. People are saying it shouldn't happen. I mean, this feels par for the course, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I would have to sort of experience it myself to really make my mind up as to whether or not whether or not I feel like it's worth complaining over. I need to feel the noise, you know. Yeah. I want to know exactly what these people are experiencing.
Yeah.
But, I can see it being, like, weird for people. But Fianna Fáil councillor Howard Mahoney, he said he had received largely positive feedback. So you're also definitely going to have people who are in favour of it.
Yeah.
I think there's... Mary McCamley, the Labour Party councillor, said she had had a few complaints. Mm. But, you know, like, I guess everything that happens is going to bring in a few complaints.
Yeah, I don't really know what I think. I think I agree with you. I'd need to see it and experience it. And I'd also need to know, like, what is the convenience of it? Like, does it actually make things easier? Does it make deliveries quicker? Like, is it going to make my life better? Because I'd be willing to compromise a lot if it's going to make my life better.
Yeah, and also, well, for me, it's also how much does it impact delivery drivers as well? Like, is it driving wages down? Because I feel like it probably almost certainly is. Like, if you've got these robots who are going to do the job for free,
yeah,
you know, it's less incentive to pay, you know, human beings. Yeah. So that's a concern. You know, if you go forward now and you have McDonald's and these other huge companies all relying on Manna, I think that would not be great. But yeah. I mean, I suppose it's a very early. Sort of early stages of this technology, so we'll see how it unfolds.
Exactly, we'll watch and learn. Carl, I was going to get you to talk about Kate Middleton, but we've actually run out of time, so I'll save that for Showbiz on Wednesday. Are you devastated? I'm sorry.
I've actually, so I wrote quite a lot about this last week, and I think I might be all royal family'd out.
Okay, you know, well, good.
I think that's one for the entertainment episode.
Okay, thank you so much. Carl Kinsler, you can read him. His Cerealing in the Years column is every Saturday on thejournal.ie. Highly recommend. It's very, very good. You can also read other bits of his work there. And of course, you can find him on the internet. He is, am I going to be able to do, no, I know on Twitter, at TV's Carl Kinsler, on Instagram, just Carl Kinsler, no?
Carl.Kinsler.
Oh, I should have gone with my gut. That's what my brain initially said. Aww. Well, Carl, thank you so much. Have a great week.
Thanks, Louise. You too.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.